From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made as we move on into the spring and still in the Easter season all the way till Pentecost. Easter's not over. He's just beginning, if you will. And pleased to have you all with us on the Bishop's Hour. Indeed, this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And we're glad to welcome in Bobby Miller, Assistant Director of Camp Pendola, coming to us from Trinity Pines, our great Catholic center up in Colfax. Bobby, good day to you.
Greetings from up in the Pines. How are you?
Yeah, how are things up there in the Pines?
Oh, it's beautiful up here. Spring has definitely sprung, finally getting some flowers, and the trees are blooming. It's beautiful.
Well, they talk about the super bloom this year that I don't know if it's hit Colfax, but it's hitting all the foothills and I guess the desert and everything else, all that rain, just the wildflowers are going wild.
Yeah, it's definitely in bloom up here. It's beautiful.
I remember in junior high, we used to have a wildflower collection, you know, and identify all of them and stuff. And my dad would take us out in the foothills and we'd pick flowers and stuff. But some years it was a lot worse than others. Like it was kind of scarce. We were picking dandelions.
Right. Yeah, we definitely have a lot of dandelions right now in our lawn.
Yeah. No snow? You had snow, though.
No, we had snow. It's finally melted all away from here. Trinity, I know we have a little bit still left at camp.
So. Yeah.
But that's going away day by day.
Well, pretty soon, all that, you know, you better duck because all that snow up higher is going to melt and you're just going to get this gush of water.
Oh, I know. It's definitely been kind of muddy and squishy, so we're already dealing with that. We're hoping it'll dry out sooner than later.
Yeah, that's great. Well, it looks like spring has finally sprung.
It has, and it's absolutely glorious. I love it.
Yeah. So tell us, Camp Pendola, you have some needs still. You're about a month and a half away from opening.
Yeah, we are still looking for staff. We are definitely in need of camp counselors and also a health center nurse. We just got hit with that. So we are definitely still looking for staff. It's a great opportunity. I was a counselor back in my late teens, early 20s. It's just an amazing experience. You get the power of prayer out in nature, and you get to influence our youth and disconnect or reconnect it. I mean, it's a great way to earn money, save, and have this experience of being out in nature with our youth.
There's not a lot of ways to spend money at Camp Pendola if you're a counselor.
No, there really isn't. And so you come up with us and stay on Sunday, and we start the work week on Sunday, and then you would have Friday night through Saturday off and have to be back Sunday. And so, yeah, in the meantime, you're up there with us. We're feeding you, we're housing you, and you're earning money and saving it. So, again, another great opportunity to save money and have a great experience up at camp.
Yeah, I don't think people realize. They think, oh, boy, I'm gonna be, AWOL for about 6 weeks solid. No, you get a couple days off every week. Two nights you can be away. And I presume if somebody, maybe doesn't have transportation or lives a long ways away, they can still stay at the camp on Friday night and Saturday night.
Absolutely, yeah. They don't have to leave. They can stay throughout the weekend. I usually will stay up there through the weekend because I absolutely love it up there. So. But we can help people out if they need a ride somewhere.
Right.
I have a car. I could take you somewhere if you needed it.
Marysville.
So it's not like we're going to leave you high and dry out in the forest.
Yeah, well, it's such a beautiful site, SITE plus SIGHT,
right.
Both. But it's so wonderful to think that the Pendola family, 60-some years ago, decided that this would make a great summer camp. And you never know how that's going to go,
I thank the Pendola family every year for this beautiful gem that we've been gifted up there in the forest. And it is a lovely, lovely, lovely piece of property. And like you said, it is an experience just to get out there, disconnect. Like, we don't have cell service. but we do have Wi-Fi a little bit of it.
So how big is this site? Is it 5-6 acres, something like that?
I know, I believe we're around 40 acres up
there. Are you really? Oh wow!
Yeah.
I guess I didn't see all of it when I was there.
Oh, it will take you a good while to do a whole tour of camp, and I would love to give you a tour anytime you'd love to come up.
Well, I will do it. I'll bring my family. They would love to run around up there and climb.
I would love to have you. Yeah, anytime.
Climb the trees and and all that. Of which you have a lot of trees.
We do. We have a lot of trees. We also had a lot of trees fall, but we're getting them cleaned up. So.
Yeah, well, boy, that's happened all over the West, hasn't it?
Where, it sure has, yeah.
Trees just I was reading about Sacramento, how many trees they lost. They like to think of themselves as the city of trees, and boy, they lost a lot of just big old trees. You can still drive some down some of the streets in Midtown and see, oh, there was where a tree was, and there's where a tree was.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. So tell us about the nurse. Do you need an RN, or maybe describe that a little bit for who exactly you're looking for?
So we actually have a resident RN. She'll be overseeing everything via distance, but we actually need a health owner personnel, which I've ran in the past under my EMT certification.
Mm-hmm.
So, nursing, EMT, those are some of the qualifications we would take to run the health center as well. All of that information is also on our website, too, at pendola.org. You can break down all of what we're expecting out of the health center manager.
Very good. And that person is there for the entirety of what? What are the dates that they'd need to commit to?
They would start probably the first part of June with us as the leadership team, because they're part of the leadership team. And you would definitely have to stay through August if you wanted to come up and be the full-time health center person for the summer.
All the way through what, family camp?
Yes.
Which is what, the Labor Day weekend?
Yeah, that would be great if they could stay through the whole time. But if not, we understand.
Wow. Well, that's a tough spot to fill.
It is. It definitely is. But it's a lot of fun. Like I said, I've run the health center in the past, and I have absolutely loved the opportunity to work with the children and educate them about the different bugs alone at the camp.
Uh-huh.
Like, this one will bite you for sure, so don't touch that one. You're going to have to wear mosquito repellent, or this is going to happen.
So what kinds of things would you see in the health center?
Just basic bug bite, your mosquito bites. Mosquito bites, number one, is what we see at camp. No matter how much repellent you wear, you're most likely going to get a mosquito bite.
Sure.
But other than that, it's just scrapes from, we're out in the woods. It's just basic little bumps and scrapes. And
yeah.
That's about it.
Well, I come from a family of RNs, but they're all scattered, I don't know if we could bring them back for that long, but it's an honorable profession, that's for sure. So what else? You still need counselors?
We definitely still need counselors, yes. So it's, again, great summer position for our young coming out of college right now.
Have to be 18?
Yes, you have to be 18. We do require you to be CPR certified, which we will provide that for you or help you get that done. We're also offering lifeguarding training, which will be on May 31st and June 1st, and that would be here at Trinity.
Mm-hmm.
And that also includes a waterfront certification, so you'd be able to work at like a lake or a riverfront. That's not your typical offering of your just your basic lifeguard certification, so we do offer that, so that's a big bonus as well, if they want to add that on their resume further down the road.
And you do the train, you provide the training.
Correct, yeah. I will be here with Katrina, who is from Lifesavers, I believe is the company mm-hmm. she works for. But she will be the one leading the lifeguard training here at Trinity.
Very good. And the swimming is in that pond that's always...
Yeah, so we have the pool here at Trinity that we'll be doing the lifeguard training itself in, and then we will have to do the waterfront training in the pond. So we actually do get in the pond and walk in it and do search exercises, and it's fun.
Well, as I understand it, the pond is about like a hot tub, right? It's about 95 degrees.
Oh, yeah, in our wildest dreams.
All that snow melt.
Yeah, the pond here at Trinity isn't nearly as freezing cold as the pond up at camp. That's definitely the snow runoff melt up there that definitely gets you awoke in the morning when you jump in for your polar bear swim on Monday.
Oh, my. I remember when I visited, it was late May. And it was, I brought my ice pick.
You will need, yeah, definitely. There's still snow within the pond area right now.
Yeah.
So we drain it during the off season. So. Uh-huh.
Is it creek fed or?
Yeah, it's a freshwater creek. There are two creeks that run in together to mm-hmm. form the pond up there at Pendola. And then we close it down. I mean, we still have the water run out, obviously, but we dam it up and create the pond.
Are there fish in there to nibble at your toes?
I've always seen fish, but they tend to stay way back behind where the boats are. Uh-huh. So I've never seen them up in the area where we swim, because I always make fun of the campers and be like, all right, there's fish, but it only takes one cannonball to get them to go away.
As long as they're not piranhas, who cares?
No, I have not seen any of our freshwater piranhas up here in the freezing snow water.
Well... So, describe a day in the life of a Camp Pendola counselor.
So it depends on if you have a cabin or not. So if you have a cabin, the typical day is you're with your cabin 24/7.
And how many people would be in that cabin?
Anywhere from 5 to 10 kids.
Uh huh.
So a typical day is you wake up in your cabin, you get them all ready to go to breakfast, hopefully encourage them to go down and brush their teeth. And by the way, we wake up by ringing the big bell at camp.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's around 7:30 is the first bell. We give them a couple different bells to wake up. And then we get them down there, we get their teeth brushed, and we line up for prayer and flag. So we say the Pledge of Allegiance, say prayer. And then they have a few minutes to run around, get a little bit of their energy out, and then we have breakfast. And then after breakfast, they head back up the hill, get ready for their activities for the afternoon. And so during that time, a counselor will drop their cabin off with an activity and most likely have an hour break within that time frame between breakfast and lunch. And then once lunch comes around, of course, they have their cabin back, take them to lunch. And then after lunch is Bob time, and that's bottoms on bunk. And so it's an hour of rest. And some kids like to rest. Some kids like to, you know, rally up and play cards. And so it depends on what age group you typically have or what they're doing. And then after that, it's free, or they free choice. So the kids get to choose what activities they're going to go do for that afternoon. And so the counselors will either have another break or they'll have to help with that activity, set it up, help with it itself. And then we have lunch, and then we have dinner. And then we have afternoon activities into something we do later at night, either like a dance party, a night hike, or a movie. And then the counselors will get their cabin back together and take them back up the hill, and they'll go to bed. And that's a typical day at camp.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in camp staff, you're basically running around camp, helping set up activities, helping counselors wherever they need help. You're just basically helping camp run, flow through nicely.
So what activities are there during like the afternoon? What choices do the campers have?
We'll do all kinds of different things, including, like, we'll do ponds, we'll have some type of game we've had planned, group building activities, any kind of arts and crafts, a special arts and crafts activity. I think we will do archery as well in the afternoon if the kids are requesting it.
Mm-hmm.
All different types of activities. So we're basically filling out the kids of what they would like to do that week.
And does the counselor need to be skilled in archery?
They don't. That's part of the training. Jen and I we're going to be certified archery instructors as well. So we'll let our staff and all that, we'll basically train them to be able to lead these activities as well.
Wow. So archery sounds like so much fun.
It's always been one of my favorite activities. I learned it as a camper myself up there and continued it into my adulthood, and I absolutely love it. There's a big archery range up in Brownsville
is there?
Yeah, I would love to do something like that at camp. It's kind of like a hike around station to where you hike mm-hmm. to each station to do your archery. It's so much fun. I'd love to do something like that at camp too.
Wow. I know. I know in a lot of cities now, the new activity reminds me of archery is axe throwing.
Oh yes, I've seen that. I don't know if we really.
I don't think you want to do that at Camp Adola.
I don't know if I want a bunch of kids running around with axes at camp.
I don't think you want to let the parents know.
Right,
that's
yeah.
One of our
Maybe
activities.
We'll do that in, like, adult camp.
Yeah, when I first heard of it, I forget where I was, but I think I was in Ogden, Utah, and we're just walking down the street. You know, I was there on business, but I was walking down the street with one of my teenage daughters, and here was this guy out front. It was earlier in the morning. He was just opening up, and I said, "What's your business?" He looked in, and he wasn't selling donuts. He wasn't, you know, and he said, "Oh, this is axe throwing. Come on in. I'll show you." You know, and I went, "What?"
I had, fun.
Had never heard of it. Yeah. But I guess it's people really love it.
Are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, now I can hear you. Sorry. I lost you there for a minute.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you're in Trinity Pines, you know, you're out in the wilderness.
I am up here in the pines.
yes, indeed. So you're all set with cooks and things like that?
Yes, we do. We have a kitchen manager. She is returning from last year, so she knows what she's in for. But that is the other thing we'll have staff help out too in rotation throughout the summer is if they're not having a cabin or in-camp staff, we'll have them help in the kitchen. So that's also a great experience. So they'll have their food handler certification as well. It's also a good thing on the resume.
So, yeah, it is something that's good to be on the resume, I think.
It really is. It is a great stepping stone. It is a great summer job. I can't emphasize that more. Again, I did it for years, too. It's a great experience.
Was your experience at Camp Pendola itself?
It was, yes.
Oh, wow.
I've been going to Camp Pendola since I was a child, and then I became a counselor, and then the archery teacher, and then the health center manager. I'm just climbing that camp ladder.
Yeah, right. that's great. So where was your hometown? Where were you coming from when you went to camp?
I was born and raised in Newcastle.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, and now I currently live in Colfax, so okay. I haven't moved around too much. So,
well, Newcastle's a nice, cute little town.
It is. It's beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. So, how do you deal? I always wonder this, just thinking about my own kids when they were little. How do you deal with the homesickness and things like that?
Well, I luckily went up with either my sister or a friend from school, so that was like the first couple of times I went up. So I was familiar with that. And then it seemed like the more years I went, the more friends I made at camp.
Mm-hmm. So you're looking forward to it.
Yeah, I did. It was the only time a year I'd see these certain people, too, because they went, you know, to different schools and different
sure.
areas. And this was the time we all came together and got to see each other. And back when we didn't even have social media. So that was back in the time where we were still writing letters to each other to keep in contact.
What's that?
What was that?
What's a letter?
Like writing letters and sending them.
Never heard of it.
Via snail mail. I still love doing that when I go up there. I know Miss Margaret, who was the assistant director when I was a camper and counselor, we still write each other when I go up there. She's always been great about that. But, yeah, it was a great experience. I loved every minute of it.
So how many counselors do you have total?
Right now, currently?
Yeah.
I want to say we probably have about four that we've notified.
And how many more do you need?
I would say we need at least another six.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
And do you have all the chaplains you need?
I believe so. I'm not sure about that. I know Jen usually deals with that that area.
That's wonderful that they're willing to come up there and be chaplains.
Fantastic. I absolutely love that they started doing that. I really wish they would have done it back in the past, but I really do love this, that we have a priest up there every week. And it's kind of cool that we get a new one, too, so the staff gets to experience that as well.
So talk about the religious element a little bit of Camp Pendola.
So we will start the we week off with Mass. Everybody has Mass together.
That'll be on Sunday after
Sunday.
Everybody arrives. So Sunday afternoon or noon.
Correct. Yeah. So Sunday afternoon we have Mass. And then we do offer Mass daily, which is optional. But everybody has to go to Mass on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
we do offer adoration as well.
Wow.
And then, of course, we do our daily morning prayers. We pray before every meal. We have a lot of different faith-based activities up there as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a lot of fun.
So are there other camps that you communicate with? Like, what do you guys do and what works for you and what doesn't? Is there some association or?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. We're part of the Accredited Camp Association. So it is really neat that I have been able to communicate with a lot of these different camps. And it's not just religious camps. It's all types of camps you
mm-hmm.
can think of. And so they have this big open message forum where we can post any kind of questions or read anyone else's questions about what they're dealing with, any kind of problem or any kind of solution that they've had to certain situations. So we are part of that association, and it's been wonderful. I've learned so much from them just in the last month, going back and forth and working on our accreditation as well right now. We're having a visit this summer, too. So,
mm-hmm. So the camps get accredited.
What was that?
Your camp gets accredited by a reputable organization to let everybody know that it's safe and et cetera.
Correct, yeah. So we have to follow basically all of their different rules and regulations, and they keep tabs on us, and we have to submit all of our different procedures and protocols, and if something's not working, it will be addressed and whatnot. So it's a great guideline to follow. And again, like, it's American Camp Association. So, again, you have the opportunity to communicate with all these different camps across America. It's amazing.
So what's your favorite activity there as a counselor?
Archery, for sure.
Archery.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
And then arts and crafts, because I'm an artist myself, so mm-hmm. I love creating any kind of crafty stuff. And then, well, I do love the polar bear swim. I do it every single Monday.
So is that real early morning?
Yeah, we have them wake up earlier on Monday morning, so it's their first morning up. And if the campers and counselors are brave enough, we jump in around 7:45 in the morning.
And stay in for about 10 seconds?
If that.
Yeah. you get out before you hit the water?
As fast as you can.
So is there a hot shower?
I wish, but no. Yeah, you get that sensation of warmness because you're so cold.
Oh,
afterwards.
That's right. I've actually had that feeling. I'm going, this is really strange.
They say it's good for you, so I'm just going to go with that.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Wow. Don't ask me to be a lifeguard for that.
Oh, well, we need lifeguards, so.
Oh, that's great. What are the kids' favorite? I would think the night hikes. That sounds kind of exciting.
Yeah, they do love the night hikes. We do this really fun game where we play, like, moth and bat, and we teach them how to, like, snap their little fingers, and bats will come down and fly over us, and It's a lot of fun. We have them even hike without their flashlights off because we'll have a team of counselors in front and in back, and it's one of my favorite activities. I always go on it, too. And then we'll hike them up without flashlights to the top of the hill, and we'll play games and look
wow.
at the beautiful stars because we're out in the forest with no light pollution. And I've had some campers tell me that they've never seen the stars before, even counselors. And to come up to camp and see the stars with absolutely no light pollution is overwhelming sometimes for some people. And I just wish everybody could experience it. It's absolutely gorgeous.
You know, you're exactly right. It's just amazing. We forget, you know, in cities for a lot of good reasons, we have streetlights and, you know,
right.
every other kind of thing. Some cities are trying to, you know, have their streetlights aim a certain way or use, you know, dimmer bulbs or something, you know. But,
right.
And then you get out. I remember last summer with our family, we were down at Joshua Tree down in the Southern California desert. And, oh, my goodness. I said, I didn't know there were that many stars.
Right.
And not
yeah,
just
it is.
How
it
many.
It gets overwhelming
but,
sometimes. You're like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, they're just crystal clear.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing up in the mountains. It's just amazing.
And then we'll have Father D. Marshall up there too, who's really into astrology, and he puts on the most amazing star talk up there one night, and I'm definitely looking forward to that.
Wow, yeah, it's and you know, with the new telescopes and everything that they've sent off into space, it's just
We have big telescopes that we'll set up there on the chapel deck as well. And again, Father D. Marshall is really good about that. He has those things dialed in, and it's great. Like, that's one of the first places I've ever seen like the moon so clear is from one of our telescopes up there.
Yeah, you know, some of the earliest astronomers were, you know, really talented, were from the Vatican, you know.
I believe it.
I think the Vatican still has some astronomers down in Arizona.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. So it's, and I was reading an article in the New York Times, and they said that several popes have had, I don't know, stars or planets or something named after them.
Oh, wow.
And even some of the astronomers have, so... Because they've done such great work, you know.
Well, maybe we can get a star named after Camp Pendola.
Wouldn't that be great? The Pendola Cluster.
I would love it, and then we can look for it up on the chapel.
Yeah, that would be great. So, are you still taking applications for campers?
Yes, we'll definitely pick those up until camp pretty much happens. We're not going to deny any campers.
So what sessions do you offer, and you know, I guess sometimes you have boys and girls, and sometimes it's just single sex, et cetera. Can you break
it
down?
Yeah, so we do have an only girls week, which I find funny, because whenever I tell the kids when I go visit them in their classrooms, they're like, how come you don't have an all boys week? I'm like, you guys haven't rallied together and put one together like the girls did.
Yeah, yeah.
But June 25th through the 30th is the all-girls week. That is the only week we can't have boys up there.
Okay.
But we do have the teen trips as well that are just boys and girls. Like, we don't do co-ed canoe trips. It's either boys' canoe, girls' canoe. The backpacking trip is co-ed, however, though. And that's for older campers, your high schoolers and up. And then... So, yeah, our first week is Weird Science, and that starts the 18th of June. And then the following week is the Girls Just Want to Have Fun, Girls Only. The week of July 9th is Fun in the Sun. That is a co-ed week. June 16th is Survivor Week, and that's teen week, basically sixth grade and up, and followed by Christmas in July, and that's co-ed.
Wow, and you have some, during one of those weeks, some canoe trips.
Yes, the canoe trips are, the boys' canoe trip is June 18th, and the girls' canoe trip is June 25th.
Very good. Well, Bobby, it's so good to talk to you. Thanks for all the great work you do up there, and we'll look forward to our paths crossing again soon. I hope you get a nurse and a whole bunch of counselors.
Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Bobby. God bless. That's Bobby Miller, assistant director at Camp Pendola, and what a great staffer she is up there. Does such great work, and at Trinity Pines as well. We had a chance to sit down with Bishop Soto in person, and I talked to him about Easter and the Easter season and a whole bunch of other things, St. Vincent de Paul Society, and we're going to bring you that interview now. That's us. Welcome back. And we are just pleased and honored to have Bishop Soto in person.
Yeah, well, happy Easter, Bob.
Happy Easter to you.
It's good to be with you.
We are still, and good to be with you, we're still in the Easter season.
That's right,
of course.
Hallelujah, hallelujah.
Yes, indeed. So. And just came through Divine Mercy Sunday.
Right.
You look at... Well, I still say Sister Faustina, but St. Faustina's diary, and you just crack it open to any page, and it's so inspiring.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it really is. And all these great number of people came into the church on Holy
Saturday. Well, I was at the Cathedral of the Blessed Sacrament, and I'm not good at the numbers, but I'd say I probably baptized at least 15 people.
Wow.
You know, Most of them adults,
yeah.
And then I had another 50. I received one person into the church, and confirmed another, or there was another 15 people who were baptized Catholic but had not, you know, made, right. not received their other sacraments. Right. So they were there. So, I mean, that we had a crowd. It was a little crowd. And
that's wonderful. It's just wonderful to, as a cradle Catholic, and I know you're a cradle Catholic, to see people that have decided to go into the church. Although I was baptized the day I was born, and I gave my permission. But to see that is so inspiring.
Yeah, it is. It is inspiring. Yeah. And of course, and each one has the story, you know, and, right. and that, so it's a, there's a certain gospel story related with each person. And you know, I didn't have time to listen to each of their stories, but, you know, it's afterwards, it's always, you know, I've gotten to referring to it as the eighth sacrament now, is the picture taking.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And so, and it's only valid if the bishop's there. So
that's
in any case,
right.
so I wind up taking lots of pictures. But the nice thing is that, you know, who they draw close to them at that time, right. you know, and you know, whoever the person that was baptized or received to the church, and to see the family or friends
right.
gather around them for the picture. And it's a little glimmer of the stories mm-hmm. that brought them to the
right.
church. And you know that besides, obviously, Jesus and his wonderful mercy and wisdom, but that is, that some of these individuals had something to do with
yeah.
having that person make that step and to plunge into the waters of baptism.
And I've heard stories from people who went because they were a family member or a friend, and they weren't Catholic,
yeah.
and that led to their conversion.
Right,
you
right.
know, just seeing this and seeing how important it was, and just being in the beautiful church.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't think he would mind me telling, but I was, his last name is escapes me, but Deacon Paul, he's the deacon in St. Dominic's in Orland, right now his last name escapes me, but he and his wife, were Baptists. They were, and so in any case, I had confirmation there, and he and the Father Mauricio and Deacon Alfredo was there, and we were talking, and his was a whole conversion story. Mm-hmm. And he and his wife were married as Baptists. At some particular point, they became Episcopalians, and I think he was an Episcopalian priest. And and then they eventually, as he and his wife said, they came home, you know,
right.
and became part of the Catholic Church. And
wow.
And then, you know, and then he became a deacon. And
wow.
So he was quite a story.
He, with your permission, would be eligible to have become a Catholic priest if he was a priest, say, an Episcopal
you
priest.
Know, since we're on the radio, Bob, I don't really I mean, I'd have to look at the details.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
You know,
exactly.
I mean, in general, it's not automatic, but I, you know, there would be certain conditions that would be
right.
necessary, and
right.
and but in any case, it was a very interesting,
yeah.
very interesting story.
That's wonderful. Yeah,
yeah, he's, but yeah, that's and that's true, almost across the board. When you have adult baptisms or adults coming into the church, there's always a gospel story
yes.
attached to that.
Yeah, well, it's wonderful. And the Easter season goes, what, right up to Pentecost?
Right up to Pentecost. And, of course, and then, you know, how should I say, then so we have Pentecost, and then you have, then the following Sunday is the Feast of the Holy Trinity, and then the Sunday after that is Corpus Christi. And so, like, you know, in some sense, it takes a while to really get back into ordinary time.
Yes, it does. It does. I love Corpus Christi with the procession. And,
oh, yes. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I remember we were on a family vacation, and we happened to be in Seattle, and went to the hotel. It was Saturday afternoon, and we said, is there a Catholic Church, because we figured there was a vigil mass
in Seattle. Okay, all right.
And he said, well, let me look it up. You know, he wasn't quite sure. You know, he knew where the Space Needle was, but he didn't. You know, and Pike's Market, but he did. And he directed us. Turned out it was the cathedral, and we show up at about 15 minutes, and here's this procession. I went, oh my gosh, it's Corpus Christi.
Yeah,
it was beautiful.
Oh, good.
Really. And what a witness that there was a
procession of Corpus Christi in Seattle would be remarkable.
I would agree.
A
with
public
you.
Recession yes, in, yes. in Seattle, that would be remarkable.
Seattle or Portland.
Yeah,
they're both. I think I read one time Portland's where I was born, but I think I read it was the most. Oregon was the most unchurched state in the nation, and it just went right. Like a dagger.
I'd be interesting to see the statistics of that in terms of, you know, is that because of the urban areas, and is that true? I mean, well, you know, the seminary that I send some of our men to, Mount Angels,
right.
you get out to that area,
yeah.
and again, the rural areas, which is true here in California,
right.
it's a whole other different.
Way different.
Way different pace of rhythm of life.
One of your colleagues, Bishop Fasha, was in the Diocese of Baker on the eastern side, and you're right. The demographics are just—it's the mountains. There's something about the mountains, you know, that high, dry air.
Well, maybe.
But I think you're right. It's the urban areas that have done that. But we're almost to this annual Dinner for the Poor.
Yes, that's right.
Saint DePaul.
Yeah.
This year, you know, usually they bring in a former Notre Dame football player to speak to the audience.
Yeah.
This time they're going to honor, and he's going to be the featured speaker, Father Dan Madigan,
right.
who he didn't come with the Mercy Sisters in 1857, but he's been here a long time from the old country.
Well, and Father Madigan has talked about extraordinary. Many priests have. Been very exemplary in the area of the works of mercy,
right.
But I think you know, without hesitation, you know, Father Dan Madigan has been one of those stellar individuals in terms of who got the connection between, you know, the sacrament of charity and the works of charity,
right.
and that he his life, his trajectory as a parish priest has always been highlighted by his commitment to the works of charity.
Yeah, he's starting
with the Sacramento Food Bank.
With the Sacramento Food Bank, I think started at Immaculate Conception.
That's right.
And now the Sacramento Food Bank is like they're the ones that distribute to 220 outlets in the county of Sacramento.
It just shows you the you know, the power of logistics. I mean, the Sacramento Food Bank does many things well, but they are the master at getting food out to
exactly. They've gone from the model of you come to us to pick up the food to getting it out to parishes and community centers and I think last time we talked to Blake Young the CEO, I think he said it was like 220 different outlets just within Sacramento County where food is distributed.
I will say you know, Blake's done a great job, and again that all started with I think. You know, I'm trying to remember whether the Run for the Hungry started either While Dan Madigan was still the director?
I think they just had their 30th or 31st anniversary of the run.
Is that right?
That takes us back to early 1990s. And so...
That itself is a phenomenal event.
You're the official starter.
There's two races. I do the first one.
You do the first one. Yeah.
Actually, I remember a couple of years. I did the first one, and Father Madigan did the second one.
And they have like 30,000 people. On a Thanksgiving morning.
Yeah.
You're right. I don't think there's another. I've seen the stats on it that there's not another Thanksgiving run anywhere in the country that has that kind of numbers.
Right. But I, you know, getting back to the St. Vincent de Paul dinner, which is coming up
on Friday night.
That's just a great event. And obviously, recognizing Father Dan Madigan his work deserves to be recognized, but I also want to take this opportunity to just acknowledge the heroic efforts of the men and women of the St. Vincent de Paul Society. It's just a great organization, and in any conversation that I have with Vincentians, that there is just such passion and such generosity and cheerfulness about the work and why they do the work,
right.
And that's been my experience even when I first became familiar with the Society of St. Vincent de Paul back in the Diocese of Orange, and that's been borne out here in Sacramento, that the people who are involved with the St. Vincent de Paul Society, for them it's a spirituality,
right.
and it's really that they serve the poor with a deep conviction that they are serving Christ, and they go out to meet the poor with that in the same way that almost one would make a visit to the Blessed Sacrament,
right. You're exactly right, and the thing that's they don't have a big corporate office. They go out to the homes of the people they're going to serve. Sometimes the homeless, and try to assess a need. It might be they need some rent. They might need food. There could be some medical problems, and they can't solve everything, but they will refer as best they can, and they go out in pairs.
Yeah.
And, we had Paul Starkey, one of the former presidents,
right.
A Notre Dame guy,
and
on the program a couple of weeks ago. And he said, because of COVID, their numbers were down a little bit in terms of volunteers, and that they're still looking for people, and they're always looking for people. And it's just it is such a wonderful organization, all volunteer, although they now have an executive director,
right,
which to help run the store and all the it's just remarkable, and they've are part of the Gabriel Project now,
right.
Which
is
I think going to bear great fruit.
St. Vincent de Paul is a wonderful organization, and they do good work.
Yeah, very good. Well, the here we are living in life issues are all over. I mean, it's become completely about politics. It seems now, but we're seeing. I don't like the red state, blue state, and all that, but we're seeing some states go one way on the abortion issue, and other states going just the opposite. You know? And yet here we are in California, where we're one of those states that's I hate to say pro-abortion, but it's almost that's
I think you can say that. I mean, it's become a California. The California leadership, political leadership, is really out to protect and enshrine the abortion industry, and it's a it will be a very sad and a tragic legacy, because I think, you know, I do believe that the the Ark of Justice is sooner or later is going to bend towards a society without abortion.
Yeah.
and that the insidious and distorted nature of the whole abortion practice people will look back on that and wonder how could that
almost
have happened?
The way we look back on slavery,
mm-hmm.
say like how could that have happened in this country?
Well, you know, I mean, I go back. There's that legacy, and there's also in this country, and not often talked about, but that is the eugenics, you know, there was a Supreme Court decision. I don't remember the dates on that. It was okay to sterilize a woman,
right.
Because she was considered an imbecile,
exactly.
You know, and
exactly.
and that was legal in California,
right.
And now I mean we look back on that now, and it just is. There was a whole culture on that. The mm-hmm. Supreme Court, argued, came down with a decision in favor of that,
yeah.
But now eugenics is. That people look back on that now and this is, you know, that can't be.
And yeah. Yet the founder of Planned Parenthood,
absolutely.
All about that. Not to have babies.
And the abortion industry is still, in many ways, a very eugenic culture.
Yeah, it's so troubling, but. Even as we are here in California, it's not illegal for us to advocate for life. And we have so many organizations, whether it's 40 Days for Life, the Mother Teresa Home, the Bishop Gallegos Home, Sacramento Life Center, the Gabriel Project, on and on and on. We have many opportunities to promote the culture of life here.
I think that is... our ability to be able to teach on that subject and to speak on that subject is also supported by the fact that we commit so many good works of mercy to that.
Yeah, we're not just advocating something.
Right.
We've got our feet.
I can't remember what the issue was in the recent papers where one of the commenters was saying that. Why aren't pro-life people, supporting the child and the mother after, after birth? And that argument is oftentimes thrown out, I think in terms of our ability to be able to speak,
right.
With credibility about the dignity of human life is the fact that we do,
exactly.
we are committed to both in terms of the services that we provide and in terms of the many things that we advocate for,
right.
That we do care about the yep. dignity of the human person at all stages of
life. Yeah, it's almost this, you only care about the baby in the womb. What about when it's born? Has been spoken so many times that it becomes that fact
right.
in many people's minds. And you're exactly right. I've argued that to anybody that'll listen to me is look at what the church, we were just talking about St. Vincent de Paul.
Absolutely.
If somebody
absolutely.
Came to St. Vincent de Paul with a two-year-old
uh-huh.
and said, we got some problems here, they would find a dentist or a doctor or uh-huh. a nutritionist or whatever it is that two-year-old needs.
Mm-hmm. And I think oftentimes, within the Catholic tradition, we always have to push ourselves to do better.
Sure.
But I think that the usual line is that you have to practice what you preach. But I do think in many ways, when you look at the spectrum, the wide spectrum of the works of mercy that the church does provide, and to which so many Catholic men and women are very devoted, you know, religiously devoted, right, to these works of mercy, that we also have to, there is a certain command for us to preach what we practice.
Yes. Yes.
Well, you know that, and we can do that because our commitment to the works of charity is so strong.
So strong. And, you know, we hear that, you know, we're humble and you don't want to pat yourself on the back, but at some point you want the society to know what we are doing,
mm-hmm,
and so they can avail themselves, you know.
Well, I'll say, you know, someone who's always, you know, Father Dan Madigan, who will again speak at the dinner, and he's not one to sit on his laurels. And I mean, if no. somebody could sit on his laurels in terms of him. You know, it would be him. But you know, he is always, you know, saying, "What about this? And what about that? And couldn't we do this?" And very much a passion for him. And I think that that's. I know that he's very committed to the Bishop Gallegos Maternity Home.
Right. Oh, very well. It's very interesting. We were both at the Bishop Gallegos Maternity Home dinner September, and he wasn't even the guest speaker.
Yeah,
but he became the guest speaker.
Right, that's right. And he we all got a lecture from him about what else we needed to do. And so so that's what I mean.
Yeah,
that's what I mean.
Yeah, there he was, and he says, "Can I say a word or two?"
Yeah.
And we all sat back and listened, and he was right. You know, yeah. You know, one thing that has always struck me, I remember being in an event for the AIDS ministry in the Diocese of Sacramento, and a fundraiser, and somebody out in society said to me, like, "Where are you going tonight?" And I said, "The Catholic Church has an AIDS ministry? Like, mm-hmm, how contrary," or something. And I said, "It's not contrary at all."
Yeah, yeah.
I think the figure I read, 1 in 4 people with AIDS worldwide is cared for by the Catholic Church.
Yeah, we're one of the largest providers of care.
Yeah, and those kinds of things, I think that's where we do need to get the word out,
mm-hmm,
you know, that we care.
Yeah, well, yes. I think in some sense, Bob, it is important for us, and we are in a very, polarized situation, and the rhetoric is vicious, and a lot of it is not very helpful,
right.
Not very helpful,
right.
But that's where our own commitment is, that we have to speak from the gospel and we have to speak from good works, and that I think in and we might say, well, you know, it's not, nobody's listening. But I still think that is our most persuasive, right, and powerful posture.
Yeah, and you know, our posture is, it never fits conveniently into a political party.
Yeah.
People, I think, sometimes to get, you know, well, this is a really conservative group or this is a really liberal group. We don't fit any of those labels.
Yeah.
I know that if you're against abortion and for some reason, and I've never figured out why, that makes you a conservative.
Yeah, that's right.
But if you're in favor of helping an immigrant, that makes you a liberal.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know why that's the case, because they're both stem from our belief in the dignity of human life.
No, it's people try to fit us all into boxes.
Yep. Yeah, that, especially today.
And that's where that's particularly, you know, Pope Francis's one of his pastoral principles is that reality is greater than ideas, and that. You know, the reality of who we are and of what we do, and the reality of the gospel is greater than the ideas. Bigger than the ideas that we're dealing with.
Bishop, we only have a couple of minutes, but speaking of St. Francis.
Pope Francis.
Did I say St. Francis? We're not speaking of St. Pope Francis. He hasn't been canonized yet. Thank you. But for Pope Francis, 10th anniversary, a lot of people thought he was going to be a placeholder or between popes. Here he is, 10 years.
Well, I will say that. I mean, he is aging, and he does have some ailments, but that's a decision between him and the Almighty as to how long he will continue to lead the church. But I do think that one of the things that I take away from he's been the Holy Father for 10 years. In his writings, and I think also very much in his actions, he's drawing from the legacy where he was formed, and that if you read his documents, he quotes often. And frequently, Saint John Paul II,
right.
and his predecessor Pope Benedict.
Yes,
I mean, he cites their documents over and over again. And I would say in terms of recent pontiffs, I mean, I think that he cites his predecessors more often,
very definitely,
more often than his predecessors cited other popes. I mean, it's really quite remarkable.
Yeah, and you hear sometimes people say, "Well, there's this conflict or something between Pope Benedict and Pope Francis."
Well, that they're different.
Yeah,
and I think on some sense that in terms of particularly some of the initiatives of Pope Francis. Is to see it as a rupture from the predecessors and more often than not, when I read the documents or his own explanations, he's drawing from
Absolutely.
John Paul and Benedict in terms of the course that he's trying to set for the church. And one very good example is, the whole expression of culture, the culture of encounter that is in some sense kind of the one of those aspirations of Pope Francis, but yet. He's drawing that from Pope Benedict.
Right.
I remember in his very first encyclical, Pope Benedict, Deus Caritas Est, God is love. Mm-hmm. In the very first paragraph, first or second paragraph, Pope Benedict says that, that being a Christian is not an ideology or a way of life. It is an encounter with an event, a person.
Right, right.
That gives us a new horizon and a new direction. And that person is the person of Jesus. And Pope Francis, I think, takes that idea and says that's why a cultural encounter is so important, because it opens us up to encountering the wisdom and the mercy of Jesus.
Bishop Soto, always a joy to see you. Thanks for all you do.
It's always good chatting.
Prayers of
talking
all of
with
us
you.
Go with you, I'm sure.
Oh well, I would just ask that, particularly in this Easter season, I'm very busy with confirmations,
yes.
and thanks be to God. And I know many of my brother priests will be busy with First Communions, and so I mean the Easter season is in full swing,
yes.
And I just ask people to continue to pray for all those who have been baptized, and to pray for all the many children and young people who will be receiving the Easter sacraments, because this is a great it's not only springtime, but it's the springtime of faith.
Very good. Bishop, thanks so much. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless everyone.
We stand and lift up our hands, for the joy of the Lord is our strength.